Hello, Jets fans. It's Dr. Emma here, and tonight the team and I are going to be reviewing round 11, where we got thrashed against Perth Glory, and previewing round 12, where we hopefully will not get thrashed against the Roar. To do that tonight, I have two lovely panelists with me. Firstly, welcome, David.
Hello, Emma. Yes, it is 2019 still for those that are listening to us at home. We might say we got thrashed by the Perth and we don't want to get thrashed by Brisbane Roar. So I just want to make it clear which year you are listening to. You're not listening to an old episode.
We haven't invented time machine football yet. And giggling there in the background, hello, Andy.
Hello. It's good to be here. And once again, just like to take this opportunity to thank Mitch and Luke for taking the pot on in some circumstances last week. So thank you again, guys, and look forward to chatting about this game with you all.
Look, I'm going to be honest, I might have preferred their circumstances to ours, but, you know, we will soldier through this. Let's start with the opening question. My opening question, given we're recording this right before Christmas, hopefully people aren't listening to this on Christmas Day and they have better things to do. But at Christmas, one of our traditions is Christmas crackers and Christmas cracker jokes. And I know that Dave is a sucker for the dad jokes. So my question tonight is, can you please tell me your best slash worst, because they are the same thing, Christmas cracker jokes? And Dave, I'm going to let you go first.
Awesome. All right, everyone, what do elves post on social media? Elfies. Elfies, of course.
I like that one. I knew the answer because Dave told me earlier. It's a good one and a modern one, very topical.
I like it. It is. They've got to go with the times, and that one goes with the times.
Andy, mate, you're partial with dad joke. Have you got one?
So my one is, why does the baker bake bread? Because he needs the dough.
Oh. Not very Christmassy, but I'm gonna pay that one.
Yeah, not all Christmas cracker jokes are Christmassy, David. It's no reasonable. Mine's Christmassy as well. Also came courtesy of Dave regaling me with jokes earlier this week. What did the stamp say to the Christmas card? I'll let you. You know the answer. Go on, Dave.
Stick with me and we'll go places.
That's the one that made me laugh out loud in the pub, everyone. So if you're listening before Christmas Day, when you crack your Christmas crackers, get on the Jet Stream and share your jokes with David, because I know he wants to read all of them at Jetapool and at Jetstream Newey, so we can all partake in the glory of the Christmas cracker jokes.
We'll retweet the best ones.
Yes, we will. Love a good retweet. Okay, so boys, we do need to talk about this game, Perth Glory. We lost 6-2. I think everyone knows that. Could have been 7-2, so it's not as bad as it could have been. We're going to go through, I'm going to ask for a good, bad, and interesting from this game from each of you, and then we will discuss. So, David, I'm going to let you go first on the good. What was your good?
Look, it's pretty hard to pick a good this weekend, but if I'm going to take anything from the game, I think it's highlight and underline the fact that we can't, certainly if Martin Lee wants to have a competitive team or has an interest in this team, that we need to spend some money on the team. We're getting by on the smell of an oily rag, and this is really highlighted. This week has underlined this. Well, actually, not just this week. I'd say the last three losses that we've had has really underlined the need to have some investment in this squad, because at the moment, we're essentially playing a threadbare squad. We're just getting by, and if we want to have any sense of ambition or what we can achieve, we need to be getting better from the owner what we currently have been. So that's my positive, is that it's really highlighted we have got a problem and we can't keep on skating through.
Okay, so like coming the bottom of standardized testing, they have to invest in your school. Okay, let's see what Andy's got before we discuss. Andy.
Yeah, so my good was the fact that Stevie Ugarkovic actually scored. I think I've been saying for a few weeks that if he just has a crack and it goes in, it might open the floodgates, and hopefully I'm right and he becomes another scoring option for us, because we certainly need one.
That's a nice positive. My good, I'm going to go with the first half. I think if we'd managed to do in the second half what we did in the first half, it would have been a very different game. So I think the first half is some positives that I'm taking away from that match. Let's start with Stevie scoring, because that is a very nice positive from that game. Dave, how much did that mean to Stevie? You saw his reaction to scoring that goal.
Yeah, and I think that was a weight off his shoulders. He's been saying for this season, definitely, and also the previous season, he wants to add goals to his game. He's been getting in positions to do it, but I'd say that a lot of those chances have come out the box. That they've been speculative, but to convert that one, you could just see the release that it gave him, the joy that he had in scoring it, and it just brought out the full emotion in Stevie. It was a great way. It was a well-taken goal too. So shame it didn't come a week before when he played his 100th game. We could have done with a couple of extra goals in that game too. But, a really good call out there, Andy. I agree with you.
Andy, do you reckon that if Stevie's looking to score goals, do you think that changes the way he's going to be servicing the forwards?
I kind of get the vibe that he's almost looking to sort of grab the game and take it on himself a little bit more, and therefore may sort of in his decision-making look at whether he, you know, plays the ball in for the forwards or whether he just, you know, takes it in himself and gets inside the box and takes a shot. So I think definitely one thing it is going to do is once he's gotten this goal and maybe a few others, that people might man mark him a little bit more, similar to what we saw with Dimi. I know he's not necessarily the, you know, flary play the ball player that Dimi is, but you'll definitely see more attention played to Stevie, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really good to have an option that if you can have an option of scoring from midfield, then that just adds so much more to your team. It creates more space for your forwards too to get the opportunities to have shots on target. Without that pressure, it's could potentially free up Dimi to an extent as well. We saw that when we had Vargas in the team last year, the opposition struggled to mark both out the game, which would give one or the other the freedom and the space to be creative and put players in scoring opportunities. So it great to see him in the box, great to see him slot at home. Want to see more of it this year, and if we're any chance of turning it around, it's up to Stevie's been the player that's been on form for us, I'd say, this year. So he is the one that if he can add goals to his bow, then we're possibly a shout at turning our season around, even though we're about halfway through the season already.
And we do all love Stevie, so it is nice to see him scoring, even if it probably did take the shine off a little bit happening in a defeat. It's probably hard to celebrate your goal very long after then conceding so many. But yeah, we do all love Stevie. Dave, let's move on to your good, which I think really speaks for your, I'm going to use the word depression post this match, that your good is somewhat a silver lining of the bad, that this triggers the need for investment. How likely do you think that is to happen?
None. I think Mr. Ledman has achieved what he wants from the club. It's well known that we are for sale, or we are certainly open to a partnership idea. Ernie Merrick has constantly been coming out and saying that we aren't getting anyone in. There is no money for us to spend. That just speaks volumes to me that Ernie's just saying no. It's just not going to happen. There's no if or maybes. It's just flat out not going to happen. So we are paying the results for the investment that we've put in the squad, I'd say. From what has been said, we're not using the full cap. We're keeping spaces open. I would dare say we'd be at the minimum end. We haven't been helped by injuries to Wes Houlihan, certainly Abdiel Arroyo and Nigel Bugard as well. That one, with the form of Lucky Jackson, it could be argued that has worked out well, but it just screams of a lack of. We need to see a little bit more interest, because We had great success in Ledman's first season and the first season of Ernie Merrick. And in a league where stability has often been rewarded with good performances and successful periods in clubs, we have had the most stable circumstances in our club that we have had for certainly the last decade, and we're not reaping the rewards that many others have seen, and that says to me we're underperforming as a result.
Do you agree, Andy? Are we likely to get an injection anytime soon, or is this just a difficult period we've got to soldier through?
I don't think there's any chance of investment coming. I know that one of the excuses that Martin Lee has sort of come out with was the trade implications between the US and China and whatever else, but they don't seem to be relaxing in the area that would benefit Ledman. But I agree with a point that Dave just made, and you look at the team that has been the most consistent in the league over the recent years in Sydney FC. Every season they're changing one or two players, but the core of their squad stays the same and they just add quality to it every time. And perhaps that's sort of what the Jets have tried to do, like, but they just haven't added that quality, and the quality that they have tried to add has, you know, all Wes Houlihan hurt, Arroyo hurt, Bugard not there. So, yeah, I don't see investment, and I think if anything, the players that are performing for us, like if Stevie's all of a sudden going to now have, you know, 5, 6, 7 goals by the end of the season, hopefully that's going to jack his price up, and in a market where they need money, are they going to be that much more tempted to cash in on a commodity like that?
Interesting. Our twist of a good has twisted into an even badder of a bad. That's a bit unfortunate. I hope that doesn't happen, but I could see how it might. So that's a worry. That's a worry. Okay, so let's move on to the bad then, since we've kind of landed there anyway. Now, before we get to the bad, I want to make it super clear to all the listeners that discussing the bads is something that needs to be done. It doesn't mean that none of us are going to show up for the game next week. It doesn't mean that we're not fans anymore. It doesn't mean we're ashamed to wear the colours and our jerseys and whatnot, which I've seen a lot of chatter about on the social medias. Discussing the bads is a necessary part of critiquing where we're at right now. So I don't want anyone to misunderstand that for disloyalty to the team, because obviously we are all Jets fans regardless of the outcome, even though it would be nice to be a Jets fan in a bit more of a lucrative time, let's say. So Andy, I'll let you go first. Hit me with your bad.
My bad was that it really, in my opinion, should have been a 7-2 scoreline. I was fairly shocked when VAR got involved in, I think it was their last goal. I thought it was way too far back down the field to really worry about, but that's what we get these days. And if it was 7-2, I wouldn't have been shocked at all.
Okay, so your bad is the VAR and totally brutal that it was a decision that went for us. We will come back to that. Dave, what have you got?
I'm going to say the third goal. Andy rightly pointed out that at halftime we were still a chance, and I was keen for us to get back out there because we conceded, we'd scored late-ish in the half, but conceded more towards halftime. I think that if we'd come out and created some opportunities early in that second half, then the game would have been different. But to score with to concede within 45 seconds, that just took the wind out of the sails, completely made Ernie's team talk at halftime perfunctory, and that was it.
Mm.
That third goal was my bad.
Which links nicely with my good that we didn't really discuss because it's a little bit self-explanatory, the first half being my good. I'm going to say my bad is the magnitude of the defeat. Losing, I'm generally a very good loser, don't mind losing, you know, can say I had fun at the game, can say the team played well, you know, whatever other characteristic you need to get through a loss, but the magnitude of the defeat for me was quite crushing and can be difficult to come back from and has generated a lot of negative chatter. So, Andy, let's start with VAR because it's a bit general. Other than thinking it just went back a little bit too far, I mean, did it really matter, 7-2, 6-2? Do you have an extension on that thought?
I think it would be that thing where at that kind of scoreline, it's interesting that VAR are coming in. And whilst we want to have consistency and all that sort of stuff, you'd think like, you know, kind of a like stop, he's already dead type deal. Don't give us this sort of hope that things are going to go our way all of a sudden. So, yeah, that'd be the main point that I'd look at, is that we were not in that game. I think pretty much Hoffman's little like header in the first, for the first goal that was chalked off, if he got that, then maybe it would have been a bit different. But I think just from that going against them so early, it was, you know, momentum shift from pretty much there on. And it seemed like only a handful of the players actually wanted to stay in the game, and then it just became too hard.
So it's like we used up our VAR karma in the really wrong spot.
Yeah, using it in, you know, when it's not going to make a difference. And that's why I'm personally a big believer that they should look at VAR going to a, you know, where the captain actually requests that it be used at certain times. But that's a whole other pod in itself.
Mm-mm. Yeah, well, I personally didn't think it was a handball. But also I think there was a foul right after that handball. So if they'd continued on with the video, they probably would have taken the goal off them anyway. So I don't feel too sad about it. Dave, we know your thoughts on VAR. Do you have anything to add?
I thought the players' efforts actually were really good up and throughout the match. We certainly spoke about the team turning off and switching off in the Sydney game. I really didn't see that so much against Perth. Though more towards the end of the game, I was probably watching through my fingers than I was watching the game closely, but because I just had my head in my hands. But the players' effort, I think, just throughout that match was at a much higher level than the previous defeats that we've had so far this season, some of the previous defeats we've had this season.
All right, so let's roll those thoughts in together then, because your bad was that early goal in the second half.
Yeah.
And, you know, with my magnitude of defeat, if you say that you didn't see them switching off, but also that the early goal in the second half took the wind out of the sails, what was it that went wrong then? If they were still making the effort, what happened when the wind went out of their sails?
It's our left side, Em. We've been saying it all year that we've been struggling down that left side, and pretty much most of the goals, particularly in that second half, came down that left-hand side. It's a problem area for us. Many people are calling out for Bobby Burns, and there's varying reasons or suggestions that he's just not up to the physically up to the heat, withstanding the heat that we have in Australia. As one suggestion, I don't know how true that is, but it was, I just didn't think we were good enough, particularly defensively, and Ernie's called that out. And as a result, we were punished by a very, very clinical Perth team.
Yep, I think that is a really good point. Andy, can I just ask, did you see the second half in the same way, that there was still an effort, but I don't know, they lost their heads in a way?
There was definitely still an effort, but I don't know whether it was just that Perth were ahead, so they thought, let's really turn it on now, and had that confidence, but they seemed to just go to a whole other level, and it just looked like everything was so easy for them. Like the goal where it looked like Glenn Moss pretty much sat down. I know it took a deflection, but it really did look like he was just like, oh, I can't get to that, and just sat down. So it looked like he made an effort. And yeah, it's just, the whole thing with the left-hand side is definitely a fair point. That seems to be where most of the, you know, good results for teams against us come from. There was absolutely nothing anyone could do for, I think it was the first goal that Castro took from the set piece, but some of the other ones definitely seemed a bit more avoidable.
All right, you've both mentioned the left-hand side, so I'm going to use that to segue into the interesting, which you can interpret as interesting yay or interesting hey. My interesting was the formation. Speaking of the left-hand side, and speaking of a few other places on the field, the formation was quite the surprise for me at the start of this game, and most of the match I couldn't figure out what exactly we were playing. Dave, what's your interesting, mate?
Oh, I can't disagree with that, Em. The formation that Ernie set up with really took some working, has really taken some working out. I still probably don't understand it. But and if someone's willing to explain it to us on Twitter or social media, by all means, go right ahead. Would love to see that. But yeah, that's my. I agree. It was my interesting for the week.
Andy, you're what? Sorry, blah. Words are hard. Andy, did you have something different, or are you also on the formation for the interesting?
The formation was definitely interesting, but I think just from the discussion we've had and the points that Dave's made about the left-hand side, Bobby Burns was apparently on the radar for a while, and that Laurie especially was sort of in talks about him playing. And I almost don't feel right with the excuse that he can't handle the heat, because there's a lot of other European players from possibly even, you know, colder climate areas of Europe and whatnot that come to this league and do well in the heat, running probably just as much. So makes you really wonder what went in, and did they bother to sort of say, well, this may be a factor for you, so let's bring you in on a trial period or something like that, and see, you know, strap the measuring sort of things on and all the GPSs and whatnot, and see how he does in sort of the off season, and then monitor that and reach the point where you say, look, I just don't think you're going to do it.
Yeah, I think it's I take that excuse with a grain of salt as well, Andy. He's a professional player. He's a young guy. Sure, he's probably not acclimatised, but, yeah, I'm personally, mate, not buying it. That's it.
See, I wonder, we all know that Ernie puts a lot of weight on what happens in training. So we as the fans, we see what happens on the field, and everyone's saying, well, when Bobby's been on as a sub, we think he's done enough to get a run. I wonder if in training is where they're seeing something very different, which is why he's not getting a run. That said, I am also starting to wonder whether Ernie puts too much weight on their performance at training, because psychologically it's a very different environment to actually being on the pitch in a match.
He wouldn't be the first Jets player to have that issue. We look at the likes of Cale Bradbury, Ivan Bojica. They're to name but a few. He certainly wouldn't be the first person to at this club, nor any club for that matter. Brandon Lundy, there's another one. That's the one I was trying to think of. So, yeah.
And I was going to say, apart from, you know, in a training environment, as you said, Emma, very different, apart from effort in training, like, you know, goalkeepers, you see the clips on the news and training footage where they sort of, you know, Glenn Moss will make a bit of an effort, but it's more about it seems to be more about the confidence of actually scoring. So Ernie can come out and say, oh, yeah, they have no problem scoring at training, but that doesn't come across to a game thing. You're like, well, is there the same effort in training to stop the goals as there would be in the game environment?
True that. Okay, so Bobby Burns not starting aside, and our confusion around the formation aside, what was Ernie thinking? Does anyone have any thoughts what Ernie was going for? Playing Langwarie out of position, weren't quite sure where Cantor was actually meant to be, whether it was meant to be a back or a mid or a left or a right or a centre. Was that about fluidity? Is it genius that I don't understand? Someone help me here.
So from what I've seen, I'm just looking at like a lineup graphic at the moment, and the formation looks to be essentially 2-2-2-2-2 numbers. So it's Topper, Stanley and Jackson at the back with Miller and Hoffman ahead of them, but wide, Langwarie and Kanarovsky in the middle with Kanarovsky on the right, Stevie Ugie in front of Kano and Rydenton on the other side, and then two up front with Dimi and Gus playing more centrally. So looking at it on paper, it looks like, you know, you're pretty much always going to get a lot of joy and a lot of space on the ball because it's compact in our defence. And then there's the space, the two in the middle, and then the four up front, but still spread out a bit. So there was always going to be opportunity through that lineup. It doesn't make sense to me why you would do it. It doesn't make sense to me why you would, you know, why Fitzgerald made it to the bench when, and this isn't a Rydenton thing, it's just a Fitzgerald is a quicker, more switched on player. So why would you drop him? He's another one of those players that I think just needs that first goal for the confidence.
And it didn't seem like he played as well off the bench as he normally does.
Oh, no, I saw it a little bit differently. Andy, I saw Kanda doing more of a man-marking job on Diego Castro, and I think that was why he was deployed where he was, with Matt Redenton screening alongside him. I think Miller was pushed up, Langwa also holding back a bit, and I think that was more in response to the three defensive backs, the wing backs of Meredith and Franjic that the Perth deploy as well, because Hoffy's a lot more disciplined in tracking back. I'm not saying Fitzgerald's not, but Hoffy is a very disciplined player in that aspect of the game. And matching Langwa up against Chianese was probably what we were looking to do. Didn't really help that Lockie Jackson conceded three free kicks very early in that half. One of those he conceded a yellow card for as well. So there was Fornaroli was really targeting Lockie in that aspect, and it was no surprise that I think he was struggling a bit and he got hooked. So making essentially closing down that middle of the field, putting a player on top of the key player for Perth, and looking to shut down their outlet out wide, I think that was the concept in the formation that Ernie applied.
But it just didn't come off. So I guess it doesn't matter how genius it is if it doesn't work in real life.
Can I just add, Em, in terms of stats, the six goals that we scored, that is it's not our heaviest defeat by any means. That's obviously the Adelaide 7-0. In terms of six goals scored in our history, that's the fourth time that we have conceded six goals. The time before that was against Perth, but that was at home. Obviously, we conceded six. We conceded seven against the Adelaide, I should say. And the other six was in the round of 16 back in 2009 of the Asian Champions League against Pohang Steelers, where we were defeated 6-0 on that occasion as well. We've had heavier, larger margins than the four. We've had a couple of 5-0s throughout our time, but certainly in terms of conceding six goals, it's the fourth occasion.
Well, I look, that makes me feel a bit better because, you know, it hurts in the wake of a big defeat, but we have had big defeats before and we've survived them, and other teams have had big defeats before and survived them. So we will get up and try again next week regardless. Boys, I didn't put this on the run sheet, but you should have known I was going to ask it. Andy, do you have a man of the match?
Yeah, I had to give my vote to Stevie once again. I wouldn't be surprised if he has the man of the match for the season sewn up by sort of the end of January at this rate.
Dave, do you agree?
I really don't know him. I'm going to probably give it to Dimmy. He delivered a good set piece that created the first goal. It was his slow real pass that put Ugarkovic through for the second. I'm probably going to say Dimmy. The guy, he gets a lot of criticism, but he really hasn't stopped running, and he's been a very strong, energetic performer for us this year and just does not give up. So, yeah, Dimmy.
I think they're both good shouts, so I'm going to go Harvey to both of those and be very agreeable here. Before we move on to preview the game coming up against the Brisbane Roar, let's talk real quick about where we're at with Ernie. So after the game on Saturday, I put the question out there on social media and said, is it time to start thinking about Ernie out? Got a lot of responses, but about 50-50. A lot of people saying, well, we couldn't afford to replace him, so we need to work with what we've got. A lot of people saying we need to do something. The time to go was weeks ago. Boys, can I get your thoughts on where we're at with the Ernie situation? I'll start with you, please, Dave.
Yeah, I'm not at the point of calling for Ernie out at this moment. However, I think the club need to start looking around and considering options for Ernie's successor. He's in the last year of his contract. So I think in the club's financial circumstances, they're less likely to sack him at this point in time. And I think that they should be putting their efforts towards a replacement for Ernie, unless, of course, we see that there isn't a specific turnaround in performances. And if we're smashed again against bottom of the place, bottom of the table Brisbane this weekend, then I dare say that come New Year's Day, we'll have a new coach.
Andy, your thoughts? Agree, disagree?
I am sitting on the fence, I guess. I agree that I don't see the club sacking him on the basis of the results so far. I think we are in, as a club financially, they're in no position to sack him. And even if it was a mutual sort of agreement and there wasn't any payout involved because he decided to go, then realistically, anyone that we would be able to attract to bring in, you're going into that with the mindset of you've got no money, you're going to have to use the squad that you've got, which where they're going to get the excuses of it's not going to get any better because it's not my squad and all this sort of stuff. So I think if anything, we will, from a club point of view, they might look at sort of writing this season off, and if Ernie decides to retire or not renew his contract, then maybe they'll go down that path. Maybe he'll move into a sort of technical director role if they can afford to do that. So I can't see him going anywhere in the near future, but it wouldn't surprise me if his contract didn't get renewed in the next season.
Are we stuck in a bit of a spiral? Don't have money, can't get players, coach can't perform, can't get coach, can't get players, can't get money. How do we get out of this spiral?
Well, do the players still want to play for him as well is one of the questions. You know, can Ernie continue to get that rise? And obviously none of us are privy to the conversations he has in the dressing room or anything like that, but he doesn't seem to be a very emotional coach. Like, he is obviously well known for sitting in his seat for the entire game and maybe standing up, giving a few directions and then sitting back down again. So I don't think he's the kind of blow up coach, but maybe that's the thing. Maybe they, with a relatively young squad, maybe they get away with a bit too much because he isn't that, you know, public hard ass.
Dave, do you have any further thoughts on the Ernie Sitch before I move on?
No, I will. Ernie has brought us exactly what we needed when he came in, and that is stability and experience. The previous coaches that we'd had beforehand were none of those. They lasted a year, and they really didn't have the experience to handle the squad. We were the learning platform for them. I think that he's come in and he's done his job. It is time perhaps for a fresh set or a fresh voice within the club. But, you know, whoever the person is that's coming in, it's probably for us as Jets fans going to feel like a feeling of deja vu, because really, like, it really feels like the, except as far as we know, the players are getting paid at this point in time. It kind of feels like the end of the Tinkler era, in a way, where we were just getting by.
Well, look, you've given me some context because I thought the world was all a bit dark for us, but you've reminded me that we have had darker times, so maybe things aren't as bad as I think they are, and I'm just a little bit of a spoilt brat. So, yeah, at least we're not in the Tinkler days, and at least this isn't Stubbins, and yeah. Okay, so let's put a pin in that match and move the heck on to this week. This Saturday, 7:30 at home, we are playing the Brisbane Roar. Both teams are on 8 points. We are the Wooden Spoon Derby at the second. Come on down. It'll be fun. It's at night, so we won't get sunburned at least. Hopefully not too many people are still off on Chrissy holidays and we can get a good crowd there. Dave, have you got any key stats for me for this matchup?
Yeah, I do. It's the 43rd fixture, all of which have been at the A-League between these two teams. And the Jets have the upper hand, 19-14 in terms of wins. There's been 10 draws between the two teams. In Newcastle, this is the classic fixture where it is switched in terms of the advantage the home team have. It's the away team that generally has that. We've won 6 times. The Raw have won 10. There's been 7 draws in Newcastle. However, of the last 9 matches between these two teams, we have won 7 of them. We've lost one. That was back in season 12. And we are currently 6 undefeated against the Brisbane Roar. So our last match against them was a 6-1 victory. That was up in Brisbane. And it is currently our biggest victory over them. So, we generally have the wood over the Raw, and they're in a tough circumstances with a coach that's under pressure as well. So lots riding. It really is a classic 6-pointer after Christmas.
Andy, how do those stats make you feel, just as a general vibe on our chances for this match?
This is one of those games where you sort of look at it and expect us to do well, and I think at the present time I just struggle to see it a little bit. I think it will go one of two ways, and it'll end up being something like a 4-0 scoreline, but can't sort of pinpoint what way it will go at this instance.
Yep, fair call. Okay, so lineup. Andy, do you think we're going to see a repeat of the weird lineup and formation that we had this week, or do you think it's going to be back to the drawing board and something completely different?
I think there will be Ernie's wholesale changes, and we will see maybe if Bugard's fit, he might come in, and you might see Fitzgerald come back on for Rydenton or something like that. But hopefully you can't put that many goals past you and then go out with the same team in the same formation. Things have to change, and I don't like blaming goalkeepers for results because, you know, the old there's 10 other players that's got to go through. But I definitely think that the only reason Ernie is keeping with Glenn Moss at the moment is because the alternatives don't sort of give much more hope.
Dave, where do you see the changes coming?
I think Glenn Moss will retain his spot, and I expect to return to the classic back four that we've seen over the last couple of weeks. Johnny Katrumbas returning to left back, Lachlan Jackson coming back into this team. We really need to be assertive in this game and take it to Brisbane, whose confidence is down at a similar level that we're at, but we're at home. We won't have had to travel after Christmas as well. That's a really good thing. I expect that there will probably be a change with Matt Rydenton coming in for Ben Kantorovsky. I think he may be rightly or wrongly, and I think probably wrongly, the four guy for this. But Ernie really likes picking Matt Rydenton, and I think that will be a return to the starting lineup for him. And I'm going to put a strange one out there. I'm going to say Kane Shepherd comes back into the starting lineup for Angus Thurgate, who's been pretty quiet, and we're going to look to see him have an impact off the bench. So that's my lineup. Fitzgerald returning as well.
Oh, I would like to see Kane Shepherd back again. That would be wonderful. I hope that's a premonition that comes true, David. I really, really do. I think that would be the shake-up we need.
Yeah, he didn't travel, but I believe he got some time again in the he got some time in the F3 Derby clash for the youth, and then he played again in the youth on the weekend too. So I reckon he's probably he's at least good for probably 60 minutes. So I wouldn't be surprised if he came back into the lineup. We're looking and we're crying out for a striker, and Kane could be certainly for 60 minutes the player that we need against a Brisbane Roar defence that certainly is lacking in confidence, just as ours is.
And the fans do love him, so I think that would be a smart move in terms of the disharmony that is occurring in some of the fan base at the moment. So I think that would be a bit of a lift in multiple ways. Dave, while I'm with you, Roar are not performing overly well this year themselves. Who in that Raw lineup do you think we need to worry about?
O'Shea and O'Donovan. Oh boy, they are the two that we need to probably look out for. Roy's got a point to prove. He likes he likes scoring against his old clubs. We saw the very first match that he had for us against that lot down the road that he's happy to celebrate and really give it to his old team. And I don't expect a cold reception for Roy, but I don't expect a warm reception either. And O'Shea down the centre of the park for the Roar is probably the player that I expect to be their creative outlet as well. They're the two that really interest me.
Fair call. Some of the girls who I go with to the football each week are away for this match because of Christmas, and they're really disappointed that they're going to miss Roy returning to McDonald Jones Stadium. So I don't think... I don't think Roy will get an unwelcome reception. I think you are correct. Andy, same question for you in terms of who do we have to look out for, but also who do they have to look out for? Where is our goal going to finally come from?
I wouldn't be surprised again if we see another goal from Stevie, if he can get in the right position. With O'Donovan, I kind of get the feeling, you know, is a mystery illness or something going to come up and he doesn't actually travel to play us at home. And the other thing that I kind of worry about is our fan base is obviously, like, it's well known that Newcastle as a town and as a culture are very bandwagon type fans, and we have our core sort of 6,000 to 8,000 that come out, and I just wonder how big that crowd figure will be for this game, because obviously being so close to Christmas, people have spent money. Are you going to necessarily get the game day crowd that you would normally get, especially when the team isn't performing that well? So it'll be interesting to see how it all goes, that's for sure. But yeah, I think Stevie, or maybe if Kane Shepherd does take the field in some part, maybe he can put a sneaky goal away.
Yeah, look, I don't think we can read too much if we get a low crowd figure this week. I don't think we can read too much into that, given the hectic time of year it is. But, you know, some of my girlfriends are going to be away, but also we're going to have friends and family in town. So hopefully that can balance it out. We can still get a good showing, because it would be disappointing not to, especially for an evening match on a weekend. I'm personally looking forward to not getting sunburned in the Eastern Grandstand for once. The nighttime game's definitely a fave of mine. Dave, do you have any further thoughts on what we're going to see, or like, do you think the boys can come back and can they put the 6-2 out of their minds, or will they be trying to prove themselves, or is this just a new week, new game, forget what happened last week?
Yeah, they're going to have to bounce back. They didn't make a statement against Perth. They need to make a statement this week. And if not for the coach, then certainly for themselves. Our season is pretty much on the line here. I really expect the boys, particularly with a night game coming up for us, then that will be... I hope that we see a crowd of over 10,000, because disappointingly, we've only had one over 10,000 crowd in the last 12 months. So if everyone can get in the Christmas cheer and roll out of their lounge rooms for a Saturday night game, then I hope that the boys can put on a show for them.
Yeah, hear, hear. All right, let's get our tips for the game then. Dave, I'll let you go first.
Boys to bounce back, 3-0 win.
Whoa. You went from depressed Dave to stupidly optimistic Dave in like no time at all. That is impressive. Andy.
That's just from talking to you, Dave.
Andy, are you going to back that, or are you a little bit less optimistic?
Yeah, look, I said it's going to be 4-0 one way, and I want to believe that because I'm going to make the effort to go to the game that it will be a 4-0 victory to the Newcastle Knights Jets.
Wow, you guys are amazing. I'm not quite as optimistic. I do need to apply some science to this. And based on the stats and the current form, I don't think that we can scrape a win, even though I would love it. But I will be optimistic enough to pick a 1-1 draw. So goals from both sides. But I don't think we'll take home the win, unfortunately. But you know what? I will take a draw after a 6-2. I will take a draw and celebrate it like a win. Okay, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the W League, who ironically are also playing the Raw this week, but not at home. I don't know if we had our quota of the double headers on Sunday. Our girls will be at Raw for their match. So we get double Jets this weekend, and double Raw, but in different cities. Also a little bit of a bottom dweller game here. The Jets are sitting in seventh right now, and the Raw with just the one win, and the Raw are sitting in fifth with just two wins. So with a top four for the finals for the women's, both outside finals contention at the moment, and they both have had the five games played. So we're comparing apples and apples there. Andy, can you give us some thoughts on what chance you think our girls have against the Raw this weekend, please, mate?
I've been saying for weeks now that the W League team just need a few things to go their way and they'll be right up there. And I don't think that Brisbane are having that great of a season, and I don't think it's too far of a stretch to predict a 2-1 win to the Jets women's team.
Continuing that optimism. Dave, what are you seeing where the girls are at now? Do we have a chance of getting up out of seventh, or do you think that's where we're going to finish the season?
Absolutely, Em. I think the bye will have done us really well across the last week after a pretty heavy defeat to City in the previous match. I really got the sense that Tegan Collister was rested. Nikki Flannery, whenever I've seen her come off the bench, she's always got ice on her legs and on her knees, and I wonder if she's carrying a bit of a niggle. So I reckon that the 2 weeks off will have done them the world of good. I think that we're going to have to get past Katrina Gorry, for starters. She's back and she's playing, and she's always a controller of the midfield for the Raw. And I think if we can shut down the influence that she has on the game, and we can hold ourselves defensively, because we didn't look too bad in attack the previous week, but it was our defensive shape that let us down, then we are good for a point. Low scoring, 1-0 win to the Jets.
Yeah, I think you're both right. Rov had some, they've scored quite a few goals this season for how far down the table they are. They've got some good players, but we also have some good players. So I think it will be a very interesting match. And I actually think this might be a little bit more exciting for me to watch compared to a City type match. Raw a bit more, it's more even playing field. W League is very stretched in terms of the investment in teams, and you know, not necessarily paying players, but what the players get to work with. So I think this is going to be a good match in terms of two of the more working class teams fronting up and playing on pure grit. But again, not as optimistic as you two. I'm going to tip another 1-1 draw. Sitting on the fence all around this week, I am. I'm going to, just to round out our hour, I have a few Christmas-related questions for you boys. So I would like from you an answer as to which player you would pick and a short explanation as to why. These are not very serious questions, so no one judge me, but we've had a very serious week when it comes to the Jets, so I'm trying to lighten the mood ever so slightly. Dave, I'm going to start with you. Which Jet would you ask to play Santa Claus?
It's got to be Nikolai Topol-Stanley. I reckon he's big enough to be imposing for the kids, and I reckon that he'd have a deep enough voice to have a real good ho-ho-ho. And I just think he'd be a fantastic Santa. So big NTS for me.
Nice, Andy.
Exactly who I had.
All right. Mine's Hoffy. Mine's got to be Hoffy. Just seeing him on his Insta with his little girl, and I've seen him around town a few times. He definitely knows how to work the children. I think he would be a natural for the Santa Claus, and he'd love it because he's a bit of a larrikin. So I think he'd play into it well. Andy, you get the next one first. Which Jet do you reckon does the best Christmas wrapping?
Well, we obviously can't say Joey C because he's not with us to wrap this time. But I would have to say Dimmy, just a stylish guy that clearly puts, you know, thought into his appearance when he goes out on the field. So you've got to think he would wrap those presents good.
Good shout, Dave.
Luis Italiano for me. The guy is a keeper, so he's used to using his hands quite regularly. I'd say that his hands would be quite big and nimble, so therefore he'd be able to hold those the paper in really awkward positions and be, have the dexterity and coordination to use the sticky tape at the same time. So it's Luis Italiano for me.
I'm going to go with Johnny K just because that boy always has that focus in his eyes. So I feel like he'd just, you know, sit down and really do it properly.
So I'd be comfortable with Lewis handling things like crockery and those sorts of things because he's a keeper. And if he drops them, he's probably good with his feet too. So you've got backup there. So that's what I'm going with.
All right. Good shout. Good shout. Which jet do you think has left their Christmas shopping to the last minute, Dave?
It's probably, I'm going to say Nick Fitzgerald. I'm going to go Costa Petrados. The guy's been involved in the team a fair bit lately. He looks like the sort of brother out of all of the Petrados clan that he'd be telling what he wants, but then he'd lose track of time and he'd go, oh, it's the 24th. Oh, darn. Let's go. So I'm going to say Costa Petrados.
There's one sibling in every family who does that. We all know it. Andy, yep. Who do you reckon?
I am going to say Gus Thurgate because he seems to always be there at the last minute to put it away.
Fair call. I like that. I'm going to go with Lockie Jackson because he just seems a little aloof like that. Which jet do you think would make the best Christmas dinner, Andy?
So I have friends that are sponsors of the team and they've actually told me a few times that they've gone around for pretty good lunches and dinners with Ernie and apparently he can put a pretty mean spread together. So I would say Ernie Merrick.
Interesting. David?
I'm going to say Boogs. Boogs is a very focused and determined man, and I think that he has some secret culinary skills that we're not too sure about. It would come out and surprise people, so I reckon Boogs would make a very mean roast or toss a real good salad.
I was also going to say Boogs, but it's because I know his wife is a dietitian.
Oh, really?
The culinary knowledge in that household would be quite strong, I think. So, yeah, I think Boogs probably has had to learn how to cook a good meal to impress the missus. My last question, which is bringing us right up on our hour, so that is fabulous. Dave, which jet would you like to buy four in a Secret Santa?
Mine would be Matt Miller. He's come from the Central Coast, so he's not really used to getting anything. So I could go to Kmart, get him anything, and I'm sure that he'd be happy.
Brutal. Andy, do you have something a little kinder?
Yes, well, Central Coast are on top of the, higher up the table than us at the moment, so let's leave that. Mine is Pat Langlois. The bloke just always seems happy to be in the team, so therefore I feel like he would be someone that no matter what you buy him, he would never complain and would just be grateful that he got something.
That is sweet. I think that's a nice one. I think it's obvious who I would pick. I would pick Hoffy just because I love Hoffy and would love to buy a gift for Hoffy. But that's probably a little pathetic of me, but sorry, love Hoffy. We still have 2 minutes left, so I'm going to ask, who would you want to buy your Secret Santa, Dave?
Glenn Moss. I think I'm tempted to say Luis Italiano because it would be very neatly wrapped. I'm going to say Glenn Moss because he looks like a very thoughtful sort of guy. I see him shopping around down at Katara, so there's plenty of options for him. I don't think that he is one to be blinded by choice, so I'm going to say Glenn Moss.
Andy?
If I had to pick anyone, it would be our long-serving kit man and great friend, Brent Anderson. Guy puts a lot of thoughts into his friendships and so he would pick really good gifts for people, I feel.
Ando should have been the one that we picked for the wrapping. He has such meticulous attention to detail that he is probably – I changed my answer to Ando for wrapping.
Fair enough. Good shout. Good shout. We all know I'm still going with Hoffie. So I would like to say I wanted to pick Hoffie for all of the answers, but I decided to hold back and not be too pathetic as the only girl on the team. All right. Well, that's it. Ready for Christmas, everyone. Merry Christmas from the Jets stream. Please do look us up on the socials. We are at Jetstream Newey on everything. Please do tweet us your Christmas cracker jokes at Christmas time, or any if you have them in your brain right now, because seriously, Dave is going to love them. And we need some joy right now. And happy whatever it is you're celebrating at this time of year. We hope what we're celebrating next is a Jets win. I guess all that remains to do is thank these two boys for persevering with me tonight. Thank you, Andy.
No problem at all. Always great to be here and serve this podcast.
Wow, you are being very, very sweet tonight, Andy. That was an excellent sign-off. Dave, thank you also for being here.
No worries, Em. I really wanted to come in and say they were the suckiest bunches of sucks that ever sucked, but I didn't, and we're gonna get back there and see 3 points again this week.
This has left me a lot more positive than I was feeling beforehand. So bring on therapy. Saturday. It's definitely cheaper than
drinking too.
Cheaper than both of those things. One of those is fun though, and I choose to do both. So I guess all we need to say now is go the Jets.
Go the Jets.